Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host for a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And you recognize him, we've got Chief Ralph Ornelas on the show all the way from California. So thank you so much for being on the show, Chief. And guys, a shout out to our sponsors. Please support our sponsors. They go the great lengths to bring this good quality content to you. We have our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. Also, Compliant Technologies, our satellite sponsor. We have GunLearner.com, MyMedicare.live, and TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at leoroundtable.com. Please check that out. You get cool shirts like the one I'm wearing or the mug behind me. Also, a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at tampafp.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Ray Diedrich also with formerlawman.com and Travis Shades with lawofficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen. And guys, if you want to watch the show, we are on every podcast outlet known to man, including Spotify and Apple iTunes, two of the largest. Also, our social media, we're on Rumble and YouTube, we're on Facebook and X, formerly Twitter, and True Social. And even during the live show, we're streaming, I think, to like five Facebook pages right now. And so we got a bunch of streamers from watching. So thanks, guys, for your support. And don't forget that discount code for Gauls at Gauls.com. Be ready. Drum roll. It's Radio 15. That'll get you 15% off your next purchase. All right. So let's go to whet the appetite, Chief, and talk about. Well, I'll tell you what. Before we whet the appetite, let me go and explain what happened to me this week. And so, guys, I'm going to share something personal with everybody. I know that I've been in touch with MVS, one of our favorite supporters here. So on Saturday, my wife and I were on phone call with family. I've got a lot of family up in the Georgia area. One of my nephews, from the same sister, I've got six nieces and nephews. They finally stopped when they had the girl. She was number six, right? So one of the ones in the middle, a boy, 6 years ago, a little over 6 years ago, got diagnosed with glioblastoma, which is brain cancer. And, I don't know of anyone that's ever survived it. And usually it moves rather quickly. So God has blessed him with over 6 years of being alive with that diagnosis. So that you've got to find the silver linings when you deal with stuff like this. Much to my surprise and a lot of family members, when he got diagnosed, he had a girlfriend at the time, and they got married 3 months later. It literally is probably the best wedding I've ever been to in my life. It was at Yona, I think it was Yona Valley. It's a winery. Oh my gosh, it was absolutely beautiful. They got married, and they've been together ever since. So he just came and visited me about 2 months ago, and he's been doing good. He's been on trials and treatments and all kinds of stuff, and he's been functioning very, very well. Had some eyesight issues. Again, remember, we're talking brain cancer, so things like that can happen. And he's had some brain surgeries and stuff, but found out Saturday that it had turned for the worse, and he's under hospice care. Happened that quick. And if I wanted to be able to communicate with him before he passes, I needed to get up there. So I hope everybody understands. I'm sure you guys do. My wife and I frantically made plans to go up there on Monday, and we got back late yesterday, Wednesday. And so that's why, with no notice, we had producer Will had to put some stuff together, and we had some other content airing. We still had the show, but that's what happened. So I appreciate support. A lot of you guys, including Chief Ralph, have been reaching out to me and praying for us. I ask that you please keep the family in your prayers. The Chief and I have been around a lot of stuff like this, a lot of death in our careers and our lives, and it doesn't necessarily affect us as much as it does other people. And we, I'm more of a supportive role in all this stuff. It's part of life. And let me just also mention that as a Christian, it's a game changer. I remember when I lost my dad, which was pretty brutal for me, but I had the assurance that I will see him again. So it wasn't saying goodbye. It was just like, see you later. And I had that conversation with my dad before he passed. From a mesothelioma, which is, asbestos, in the lungs, lung cancer. So anyhow, pray for the family. They're not used. This is the first time that some of the nieces and nephews have dealt with something like this. They never lost, they haven't lost a parent or sibling. And so keep the family in your prayers. I will be going back up more than likely relatively soon. because of what comes next. And then I'm going to be spending Thanksgiving up there with the family. So hopefully all that it will work out and some good things will come out of this. But keep the family in your prayers. I appreciate it. But that hopefully sufficiently explains why I have been absent this week, but we are live today and Friday. So did I cover that good enough, Chief Ralph?
Yeah, you did. And my prayers are for your family and your nephew, because I went through this, especially with glioblastoma with my mother, and a good friend of mine last year passed away in August. What can I say? I mean, prayers for him and the family, the, you know, his siblings and his mother and father, Chip, and also for you and your wife, Patricia.
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, it's so funny that even if you're not a Christian, I mean, you know, there's no atheists in foxholes, right? I mean, even non-Christians, they're praying that God, when they have a loved one or someone that they care about that's going through suffering, you know, they say, God, please save, God, you know, the one I've never talked to before, please save them, right? But then you reach the point when it gets bad enough and becomes quality of life issues, you say, God, please take them quickly. You know, you're no longer praying for them to be saved. You want them taken quickly because you don't like to see them in pain. And of course, as Christians, we know that there is a life after death that is pretty beautiful thing. And with that eternal body, you're never in pain, hungry, tired, all that stuff. So it's pretty amazing that you go in those stages, you know? So, yeah. So now we're hoping that, you know, he's, you know, not going to suffer. And I don't think he's suffering or anything right now, but it's, you know, you don't want that process to be too long, you know? So,
Chip, I may say something. My father-in-law died of mesothelioma also.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. My dad did roof work with his dad way before they knew anything like that, you know, existed, you know? And sure enough,
that's tough. Yeah. My father ran the Bronx Iron Metal Corporation in South Bronx for years. I mean, 45 years before he was diagnosed with that. And you know, and running that, they crushing all this asbestos, whatever we're doing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so fortunately he got 5 more years, you know, of living because of a surgery they performed in Boston.
Yeah, my dad was only given 6 months to a year and a half, and he lived for about 5.5 years after being diagnosed. So that's pretty good. Yeah.
God bless your father.
Well, thanks. It's funny. We didn't know we had all this commonality, this common ground here. So So let me run through the stories real quick that we're going to be talking about, guys, kind of whet the appetite here. We've got our first story. It's the main topic. Federal appeals court in Georgia upends an Alabama family restriction for convicted parents. Guys, I got to admit, it makes your brain, it's good exercise for the brain. We're going to talk about whether if you have a conviction for, I want to be careful how this is involving pornography, but let's just say you have a conviction for something involving children, and you've got some states that will prohibit you from being able to have contact or certain kinds of contact with your own children or spend the night with them or whatever. You know, is that right? Is that wrong? And we've got a court that has made a ruling on that that might surprise you. So we're going to cover that. I think it's going to be an interesting exercise of the brain. We've got disgraced former Milwaukee judge. Her name is Hannah Dugan. She's the one that let the illegal out the back door when ICE was waiting for him, and she was actively pulling ICE in different directions so they could pull this off and stuff. So she was sentenced, and it's being called a miscarriage of justice. We're going to talk about that. We got body cam shows deputy shooting a knife-wielding suspect during a mental health call. Another, we got a dash cam released after an inspector general finds that a trooper using a pit maneuver was not justified. And the trooper initiated, by my count, Chief, 3 pits on the same car, but they're saying he wasn't justified. We're going to talk about whether they're going to prosecute him or not. Then we got a court rules that a family cannot sue an officer who fired fatal shots in a Harding Street raid. It was a no-knock warrant. And then if we have time to get to it, body cam shows suspect being injured in a shootout during a foot chase. So that's kind of the way we're going to roll. So if you don't mind, Chief, we'll start up with the heavy one first, the main one, Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. We got a couple minutes before our first commercial break. We have federal appeals court in Georgia upends an Alabama family restriction for convicted parents. So I kind of find this fascinating because it really is an exercise of the brain. It involves all kinds like ethics and morals. And so take this all into consideration, guys, as you guys consider this. The United States Court of Appeals, this is for the 11th Circuit, they issued a major ruling on Monday declaring that the fundamental right of a parent to live with their children, it extends to all parents, including those with past convictions for child pornography. So think about that for a minute. So in an in-bank decision, the court tackled the challenge, and this is dealing with the Alabama. Now, they do things differently in Alabama, all right? And so the Alabama Sex Offender Registration and Community Notification Act, the 2011 state law, it permanently bars adult sex offenders. And remember, this is considered part of a sex offender charge, you know, the pornography. So it bars adult sex offenders convicted of offenses involving a child from residing or staying overnight with any minor, including their own. Because the law's definition of a sex offense involving a child includes child pornography, the restriction applies directly to plaintiff, a guy named Bruce Henry, permanently preventing him from living with his young son. Writing for the majority, the circuit judge, not the chief, but the circuit judge, it is Robin Rosenbaum, emphasized that the right of a parent to establish a home and raise their children is perhaps the oldest fundamental liberty that exists and secured by the 14th Amendment. So I'm going to stop there. We've got a judge that feels differently that's going to chime in, a chief judge coming up. But we're going to go and start the music right here. We're going to go to our first commercial break. So, guys, this is a deep one. We'll be coming right back to it right after commercial break. Here we go.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Galls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Back with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. And we're talking about a main topic. It's going to get your head thinking here. We've got a federal appeals court in Georgia, and it kind of upends the Alabama family restriction for a convicted parent. Now, we're talking about this guy named Bruce Henry, and he is a convicted sex offender, but involving child pornography. Okay, so that I think that's an important distinction to make. I mean, I know that we're talking about some stuff that people heavily frown on, and I think that we all should, but there is a distinction between, let's just say, having sex with children and looking at pornography, and the waters can get kind of muddied and stuff. But in Alabama, their Sex Offender Registration and Community Notification Act, it encompasses these people involving these types of crimes, including pornography. And so as a result of that, it prevents Bruce Henry permanently from living with his young son. And I believe, if I remember reading correctly, that he got married and he had a son after the conviction, if I'm not mistaken. So writing for the majority, we've got the circuit judge, Robin Rosenbaum, emphasized that the right of a parent to establish a home and raise their children is the, quote, perhaps the oldest of the fundamental liberty interests, unquote, secured by the 14th Amendment. Now, the state of Alabama urged or argued that that certain classes of parents, that they forfeit these fundamental rights entirely due to past misconduct committed years before the children were born. And the court directly rejected that sweeping approach. So here, listen to this. Quote, but the Supreme Court in our history and tradition have spoken unambiguously. Parents, even those who have committed state-defined misconduct, enjoy the fundamental right to live with their children, according to Judge Rosenbaum. Now, Henry pled guilty back in 2013 to knowingly possessing child pornography after federal authorities discovered he had two videotapes and 348 photos on the computer. He served 5 years in prison, and he had a supervised release after that. Since his release, he completed sex offender treatment program, maintained steady employment, attended support groups, and through a supervised release. Well, it says it was extended to March of 2026 because he had two lapses. There was some probation. They caught pornography on his computer. It looks like adult and teen pornography when they did searches back in 2019. But he has had no further violations. And so that's been like for like the last 7 years. In August of 2021, Henry and his wife had a son. So under Alabama's law, he faced a lifetime restriction with no option for administrative relief, meaning that he could never live under the same roof as his child or stay past 10:30 p.m. The federal appeals court noted that recognizing a fundamental right, it does not mean the state cannot regulate it. And they actually ended up remanding the court back or the case back to the lower court to make that specific determination. And I told you about a dissent. So we've got a dissent from the chief judge, William Pryor, and he was joined by three other judges, and they argued that the majority improperly framed the issue by ignoring Henry or bad guy's criminal status. So that was their counter to this. Chief Ralph.
You know, you said it right from the beginning about humanist nature and how you address these issues. But I used to work with Department of Children and Family Services going into gangs' homes and even allegations of child abuse or pornography, I always side on the child, protecting the child, you know, and, you know, what bothers me is that you mentioned something and I read it, the fact that he did violate probation twice, I believe. And yep. That concerns me. So, I mean, if this Rosenbaum's decision stands, if I understand it correctly, you know, that this man's got to be monitored very closely. I mean, and you know, when you're involved in this, and I used to work with some of the special victims detectives for the Sheriff's Department. When you get into pornography, child pornography, they always used to tell me there's the gravitation going from the videos to the touching in reality. It really enhances it a lot because that desire is still there. And that's what concerns me about this young son. You know, I pray to God that doesn't happen. I hope this man, Henry, has got a hold of himself and put himself in the right position mentally, you know, and going to counseling and everything. But I'm really perplexed by this, you know, the audience and also Chip, because I interviewed a gang member at one time through analytical interviewing class, and they put me alone in a room. The tarnish and the damage to this young man is immense. So, you know, I don't know. I'm really perplexed on this one. I really am, Chip.
Yeah, you brought up counseling, and I'm glad you went there, because I mean, look, these guys. Look, this is a, you know, it's wrong, but these guys, it reaches the point where it really becomes a sickness. I mean, the chief is correct in being concerned, and that's why you really need professionals involved. When I say professionals, I'm talking about mental health professionals, because there's different reasons why these things happen. And guys, I know enough to get myself hurt on this topic, but I do know that some of these guys have been abused growing up in their life. Like the chief was just talking about a man that he talked to in the jails and stuff. And they actually end up doing some of the same things that were done to them. It doesn't make any sense, but that's where this mental component comes in. There's just a lot of stuff they need. When I say professional help, they need professional help. And that is if, you know, we're going to get them back in society where they can function at least some level. The court remanded it back to lower court to figure out what the restrictions were going to be, because they didn't say that it should be unbridled, right? That he should have all kinds of contact without any restrictions or anything like that. And you're right. You know, he slipped up and had the pornography on his computer, up to 7 years ago. They haven't had any further instances, but I think it's fairly safe to say that they haven't had any further instances that they know about. You know, so it's an interesting conundrum. You know, when you've got maybe inherent rights as a parent, but some actions that you've taken in your past now can influence, you know, whether you have those rights or not, or if you have restrictions on those rights.
You know, Chip, I know you don't want, we got other topics to talk about. I have to address this. This young gang member was sexually abused by his father and his uncle. And you know what this gang member told me? He said, Lieutenant, he goes, I committed two murders because of the damage my uncle and my father put on me.
Well, perfect timing, Chief. Yep, a deep topic. We could spend a while talking about this one, but we're going back to commercial break, guys. This is our second one. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Comply Technologies at ComplyTechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they call their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's not only helped officers tens of thousands of times, but they've actually had over 250,000 deployments. And guess what? No injuries, no deaths. It's an amazing stat. It's actually helped them achieve non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. So when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or a conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplyTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Comply Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. Go to ComplyTechnologies.com today. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Ralph Ornelas, all the way from California. Wow, we've had a doozy. The first topic took up half the show, Chief, talking about how they're doing things in Alabama with people that are involved in sex crimes with, like, children, including pornography, even though parents might have an inherent right to live with their and be around their children and stuff, you know, Alabama permanently, you know, kind of forbids it. And now we've got a, you know, appellate court that changed that. So it was an interesting story. So thanks for partaking of that. We're going to jump to our next one. It's at townhall.com. And this judge is pretty famous now. Disgraced former Milwaukee judge Hannah Dugan was sentenced, and they're calling it a miscarriage of justice. So, yeah, where Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan was found guilty back in December of one charge of felony obstruction for a role in aiding an illegal alien named Eduardo Flores Ruiz. She aided him in evading ICE because they're trying to take him in custody at the courthouse after he appeared in her courtroom on a domestic violence charge. In fact, it's domestic violence charges. There was more than one. Before a trial, the judge had argued that she enjoyed judicial immunity for her act. So this is not with the trial with the illegal alien, but before her trial where she lost in December, she thought that she had judicial immunity. So as I say this, and as we're coming up on another case that involves qualified immunity, the judge is talking about something that's called absolute immunity. And judges get it absolutely. They don't have to qualify for it. They get it automatically. Whereas with cops, we have to qualify for it in order to get it at all. So she's claiming judicial immunity, which is essentially absolute immunity. And after she's convicted, her defense team tried to get the verdict thrown out when they argued that she deserved another trial or a dismissal of the guilty verdict. Now, federal judge Lynn Alderman denied both of those motions and rescheduled Judge Dugan's June 3rd sentencing for July the 8th. Now, yesterday. So Judge Dugan faced 5 years behind bars and a fine up to $250,000. So she faced up to 5 years in jail and $250,000 in fine. But yesterday she was given a $5,000 fine. So yeah, not $250,000, but $5,000, and that's it. No prison time, no 5 years in jail, no one day in jail, nothing. No prison time and no probation. No probation either. Judge Dugan reportedly spoke about her sentencing, remained defiant that she did nothing, that she didn't do anything wrong. And yeah, that's just the kind of person you don't want to send a message to, apparently. Judge Alderman said that prison was not necessary for Judge Dugan. So the only silver lining, according to her article, is that the felony conviction means that she will never be able to serve as a judge again, although she is not entirely barred from practicing law. Chief Ralph.
You know, it didn't surprise me, you know, and especially with this judge, Lynn Alderman. I believe that, you know, she gave a light sentence to Judge Dugan.
Was that a Freudian slip? Did you really want her to get a life sentence, Chief?
I said light.
I know, but did you wonder, was that a Freudian slip?
No.
Was your mind thinking, she deserved life in prison for that?
No, you know, I believe she deserved more than a $5,000 fine. I mean, I would have rather seen her get a $250,000 fine, and what she did, because it was going against federal law and helping a illegal alien who committed crimes in our country get out of the back door, and she facilitated that. So, you know, I'm not pleased by that. And I'll tell you something else. You mentioned something very interesting. It's going to be in our next story, that here she gets, you know, judicial immunity, right? You know, and she still keeps her bar, you know, her bar. But meanwhile, you know, we're going to talk about a decision about a search warrant where you and I know judges sign warrants. And even if it turns out bad, nothing, there's no ramifications on them. But there's always ramifications on, you know, law enforcement and the counties or the cities that serve those warrants, you know. And so it's a very interesting dynamics, if I may say.
No, you're right. And perfect segue. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to skip over the video component stories, and we will jump into that one, because it's probably the proper time to cover it. ABC13.com. So remember, we've been talking about a judge that has absolute immunity, and boy, is she claiming it, trying to get away. She was still convicted, but then we had another judge who went soft on her. But in this particular case, we're talking about some cops. So ABC13.com, court rules that a family cannot sue officer who fired fatal shots in a Harding Street raid. So look, this one is going to put a lot more, it's more challenging for me as the host, because there's a lot of moving parts. And this is almost like watching a soap opera. There's a lot of moving parts and a lot of people here. So I will try to keep it straight for everybody that's listening. So we're going to Houston, Texas, for starters. And this is from KTRK. So an appeals court ruled that the families of Regina Nichols and Dennis Tuttle, that they cannot pursue a civil lawsuit against a former Houston police officer who fired shots that killed them both during a botched Harding Street raid. So Regina Nichols and Dennis Tuttle, they're both deceased. They got killed during a police raid. And this is Houston police. So the decision comes more than 7 years. Now, that's quite some time, Chief, but more than 7 years after both of them, Nicholas and Tuttle, were killed inside their Southeast Houston home during a January 2019 no-knock drug raid that was based on false information. So that's all it says initially. So we have a former officer, Gerald Goines. He is the lead agent on this case, currently residing in prison, by the way. He obtained a search warrant. He's already serving a 60-year prison sentence for using fake information to obtain a no-knock warrant. So he wouldn't be sentenced to jail if he was not a bad actor in this, in my opinion. So bad cop doesn't happen a lot. When it does, I love the fact that justice is done and that it works for the most part. So we've got this former officer. He's serving a 60-year prison sentence, but he was the lead agent on a no-knock warrant, which created this mess in the first place. The latest ruling focuses instead on whether a former officer, Felipe Gallegos, can be held financially liable for the shooting. So Officer Felipe Gallegos was one of the officers initiating the warrant with the officer that was the case agent, Goines. So Goines is in prison. Bad warrant, bad information, apparently knew about it. And this other officer is executing that warrant, you know, for the other officer. In fact, a bunch of officers are, which is typical. So Officer Gallegos has maintained throughout the case that he acted appropriately, argued that he had no way of knowing the no-knock warrant was based on false statements made by the other officer, Goines, which is a plausible explanation. A three-judge panel of the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, they actually agreed with him, and they ruled that he acted like an objectively reasonable officer and that the court would not second-guess his training and judgment, which required split-second decisions during the exchange of gunfire. So just to reiterate, this guy's not in jail. The guy that drafted that authored the search warrant and was the bad actor, that bad cop, he is in jail, but this guy was not. He's one of the officers that helped execute the warrant. And now he's being sued by surviving family. And the judge is saying, you know, this guy didn't know that. I believe this guy didn't know anything was bad about it. He's just doing his job. So Officer Gallegos' attorney, Rusty Hardin, said that the ruling reinforces the purpose of qualified immunity. And this is what we say a lot on the show, and it's good to make note of this. Attorney Hardin argued that without qualified immunity, officers would be facing personal financial risk every time someone challenged their actions, discouraging people from becoming police officers. And that's true. They came up with qualified immunity to stop frivolous lawsuits. And it, you know, and it works that way. So people that don't like it, you got to have it. Now, attorneys representing the family, surviving family, they strongly disagreed with the ruling. In a statement, attorney Mike Doyle said that Felipe Gallegos deliberately killed an unarmed woman on her couch, and then he kept changing a story that justifies something that is never justifiable. We believe that Judge Bennett was dead right when he confirmed a jury needed to make the decision about his honesty and the real facts. Doyle said the family plans to appeal the decision, hoping to ultimately present the case before a jury instead of a judge to determine who should be held responsible for the deaths of Nicholas and Tuttle. So when I read this and the surviving family's attorney saying that this cop who is qualified under qualified immunity, and this is civil from civil litigation, right? But when he shoots a woman on the couch that's unarmed, raises a lot of questions. So before the show started, the chief and I did a little research. And so here's the skinny on this. This was a cluster, this warrant. And I think that you see the chief shaking his head. You know, it was a cluster. So when they go in, cops have essentially M4 or AR-15 rifles that shoot a 223 round or a 5.56. And these two people that are living in the house, they're sleeping and stuff. They've got, you know, the guy's got a 357, or I can't remember if it's a 357 or the 357 Magnum, but a very powerful handgun. So when the cops go in, we've got one cop that is shot. Cops are shot, what, in the chest and the arm and the neck and all the place. But they thought that the bad guy had shot the cop. But it looks like it was a friendly fire incident where he was shot by one of his own. And then cops see a muzzle flash because this guy, they say this guy wakes up. It's a no-knock warrant. So all of a sudden, doors kicked in. His dog shot and killed. And he responds with gunfire. And then it's like the OK Corral. Everybody's shooting everybody. Now, look. We got to go to the commercial break. You want to hear the rest of it? Stick with us. Be right back. All right. Let's talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And guys, there has been some new stuff going on with GunLearn. So pay attention in case you haven't heard. Now, GunLearn, for starters, is the first and only company to offer a step-by-step program that takes you from your present knowledge level to become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist. Now, here's the deal. That certified firearm specialist, now that is worth college credits, because GunLearn.com, they have partnered with Smarter Degree and their university partners in order to get college credits attached to it. So even if you got it 5 years ago, and they've been doing this back since 1996, they've been teaching everything that LEOs, which is law enforcement officers, need to know about both firearms and ammunition to all facets of law enforcement. Now, you can start today with online training, or you can sign up to attend a live seminar. And if you have your own agency, you can even host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Hook up with the founder, Daniel Kelly. Again, that is GunLearn.com. Go there today. You'll be very glad that you did. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the Law Enforcement Talk Show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Ralph Winellis, all the way from California. We've been talking about a court ruling that a family cannot sue an officer who fired fatal shots in a Harding Street raid, is what they're calling it. It was a no-knock warrant. We had a cop that authored the warrant that ended up being a bad actor. He's currently serving a 60-year prison sentence. And he is a former Houston police officer. We've got some other cops involved that were executing the warrant. And, you know, when we read that, you know, the family, surviving family of these two people, the male and the female that end up getting killed, they're suing a cop that fired, I guess, a fatal shot. And the judge says, hey, he qualifies for qualified immunity because he didn't know that it was a bad warrant. But a lot of this didn't make sense when they said that people were unarmed, and they said that the woman was unarmed, but the article failed to say that the guy that she's with has got a 357, 357 caliber revolver. Not sure if it was a Magnum or not. Doesn't really matter. He's firing at the police. So that's how all this stuff ends up happening. And I'm going to go ahead and mute your mic real quick here, Chief, but that's how all this stuff ends up happening. So the cops they do a no-knock warrant, which is permissible in a lot of jurisdictions for what, if you're law enforcement, there's obvious reasons why they're important for destruction of evidence and stuff you want to prevent. But they go in, kick in the door, and the warrant was based off of bad information. So that's all we know, at least at this time. I don't know if these are good people, bad people that are in the house, but it's based off of a bad warrant. And that's what landed the lead detective, you know, in jail on a 60-year sentence. And but one of the people in the house has got a gun firing at the police. So we know that some of the cops end up getting shot from the guy with the revolver. And then we know that they're returning fire and that the woman and the guy, they both end up getting shot and killed. So it was a cluster, but it wasn't a cop rolling in there and shooting an unarmed woman on a couch. That's absolutely not what happened. And despite the way that it was written by ABC13.com. So I want to make that perfectly clear. Chief Ralph, you want to take this one from here?
Yeah, you know, first of all, you know, this GONUS, the investigator, what was the sergeant's, lieutenant's reviews of these warrants, number one? What was the reviews and checks and balance of policy if you used an informant, you know? So that's number one. Number two, you know, as you well stated, a shooting takes place inside the interior between the husband, Tuttle, I think his name was, is that right, Chip? The husband who had a gun, .357
Magnum. Tuttle, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So he shoots. And then as you articulated earlier, when you did more research, thank you, there's a friendly fire where, you know, officers, rounds are going off and maybe they shot each other. Well, Gallegos goes in, just think about this. He might've been on outer containment, sees that, he sees it. I'm only assuming here. He goes running in, he sees this lady maybe grabbing a weapon. You know, he's thinking, he's already got two officers down. You know, he's trying to save his partner's lives inside there.
So, you know, you brought up a good point, because part of that said that he changed his story, and there was an officer that was slumped over the couch that had got shot, the couch that she's on. And he said he saw her going for the officer's rifle that had, I think, a sling over him. And they said he changed his story from her grabbing the rifle to that she didn't actually touch it, but they didn't say whether. He said that she was grabbing the sling instead of the rifle, and all that stuff is very plausible explanations for all that stuff. Right. So,
yeah. And I say this to you because, you know, I don't know the planning of how they plan, but I mean, I've been part of over thousands of search warrants, and you know, that is something that's gotta be really, truly drilled down about how you're going to serve the warrant in the entry team. And the people on the outside containment, the back containment on the 3-4 side and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, it's really strategic. And, you know, officers that are maybe outside holding the front outside the building, not going in as the entry team. I've been there when it could go shooting. You guess what? He's going to go run in there, try to help his partners, you know, and he sees what he believes is a threat to his partner who's down. Maybe this lady grabbing the weapon. So, you know, it's sad all around, but he does deserve qualified immunity. And I'm glad his attorney articulated that. And also, I think it's terrible that KT, whatever it is, station, that lady who did the report, she never mentions any officers being shot. See, that's the problem about ethics. You talk about ethics about cops, ethics about media.
Yeah.
Ethics about media, you know, and I'll tell you something. That's where we're losing. That's why public loses confidence in law enforcement, not knowing the whole true story of what transpired that day on January 2019. I mean, it's just I think it was January 2019.
January 2019. You're correct. No, not drug raid. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, hey, listen, narcotic warrants, as you know, Chip, and I know, and people watching this in law enforcement, Those are tough warrants because we're trying to go in quickly to try to prevent destruction of evidence. You know?
Yeah. A lot of toilet flushing going on. Even if you disconnect, even if you disconnect
turn it off.
The water, shut it down, you get a flush in, you know, but if you do it the right way, you can grab it before it gets too far down the line. But yeah.
But you know, I got to say something though. This Jonas has got 60 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got to be honest with you. I bet it's not just for this case. After this case, there might have been previous cases they look back into.
Oh, guaranteed. Guaranteed, yeah. So the sad thing is that everybody, ABC13.com, you know, now I just wonder, people, they watch news sources and they take they believe is gospel what comes out of these people's mouths. And this one is Maya Shea is the reporter on this story at ABC13.com. And it's just kind of sad. And this is, it's just sad because people are believing this stuff and they're not going to vet the information. And at least we knew there were enough flags in the story that didn't make sense. And we said, we're going to look, this doesn't make any sense. Cop rolling in and shooting a, you know, innocent female, unarmed, you know, and that was not the case, you know. So, too bad.
I'm glad Gallegos' attorney, I think his name is Hardin, what he articulated, and also one of the judges saying, hey, you know, how do we challenge the judgment and training of Gallegos, what he saw in seconds, and how he has to respond to that? And I liked his attorney, what he said. He's, you know, it's happening here in Los Angeles. You know, it's happened in New York. My nephew's a detective. They removed qualified immunity.
Well, we got to roll in. And thanks, Chief. Rumble, we got time for just barely for this one, 2 minutes. Rumble.com, this is better. Dash cam revealed released after an inspector general finds that using a pit maneuver was not justified.
Country 96, they're coming behind
we're going to be continuing speed 35 miles an hour. And second question.
So this makes me laugh. So this, I'll let you talk about the inspector general. I have some serious suspicions about him, but they're not going to prosecute the trooper. Norwich, Connecticut State Trooper intentionally rammed a suspect's vehicle in Norwich last fall. This guy's saying it's not justified in using that kind of force, according to the state inspector general. So Trooper Wilford Blanchett uses cruiser to ram a speeding Honda Accord. Now, the fact that a Honda Accord could speed, that in itself is a feat. I think that we could talk a whole show about that one. It must have been a tailwind going downhill. But they're saying it was speeding on November the 24th, 2025, according to the inspector general. His name is Elliot Prescott. Remember the name. Now, the Prescott said that no charges would be pursued, even though he said it wasn't justified. It happened on Route 2, Norwich. Look, this guy pitted this car. It took three times to get the magic done right. It even slammed to a guardrail. The dude drove out of it. I got to admit, other than not being impressed with the kind of car he's driving, I was impressed with the driving ability. But he identified the people in the Accord as Jesus Santiago and Tylone Reddick. And Trooper Blanchett said that Santiago was going between 80 and 90 miles per hour and swerving in and out of a lane. Downhill with a back wind, by the way. I'm just throwing that in myself. As a result of the speeding, he had probable cause, he felt, to do a stop. He activates his lights and siren, and Santiago takes off. Trooper pursues. Now they get to 120 miles an hour. That must have been a pretty big tailwind. On Route 2, another trooper deploys stop sticks. The dude keeps running. He's missing a wheel. Now he's doing like 78 miles an hour, and they're doing like the pits and all that stuff, and they finally get the third time is the charm and stuff. And he concludes that Prescott, the IG, I further conclude the use of deadly force was not legally justified under the totality of the circumstances. However, I've decided not to pursue criminal charges against the trooper, which I just, you know, whatever. We got seconds left. Wrap this up for us, Chief Ralph.
Well, first of all, I love the trooper asking permission to the sergeant. Okay.
He got permission. Yeah.
So guess what? The reason he's not pursuing it, prosecution, because this inspector general doesn't want to get the sergeant in trouble with the trooper. But I got to tell you, I review a lot of force. I thought, hey, listen, that was not over-the-top use of force.
Agreed. Bonafide bad guy taken off. Again, how the Honda would, they say 120, dude, is that even possible? We got 14 seconds out. Chief Ralph Ornelas, thanks so much for being on the show. We appreciate it, Chief. And a shout out to our sponsors, Galls.com. Don't forget discount code Radio15, ComplianTechnologies.com, Gunlearn.com, and Medicare.life, and TwoBells.com. We'll see you tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.